Offers with the EAC and have had of negotiation. That must speak for us. We are finalizing the offer to Egypt and also the one to Ethiopia. These markets have been identified on the basis of the sizes of the economies, the rate of development. Several members may have observed that Ethiopia is growing quite fast, and so we have to look at it as a kind of special case of a market that we have to widen and see what sort of effective interest and whatever we can benefit from that market. The negotiations were launched in 2018, and so far, as I say, we've at least signed the main agreement. On industrial development, not much work. On industrial development, not much work has gone into the process. Just a few meetings have been convened under the tripartite. I think the difficulty here is the support for the integration process. Honorable members may be aware that we've got a lot of least developed countries and who have difficulties attending these meetings. We also have difficulties of member states that don't have capacity. In all of these instances, some work would have suffered as a result. So much concentration was on the market integration pillar and the negotiations there. The historic process of industrialization is looking at, among others, value chain development in the region, and the same goes for the tripartite. It is hoped that the tripartite we could have cross-border value chains where we can strengthen each other's capacities and share some of the experiences. There have been developments in these committees, as we state here, that we needed to develop a roadmap. There is now a draft roadmap that is still being discussed that will culminate in the development of these value chains that are being anticipated. On the infrastructure side, there has been work ongoing even from the AU on the various aspects of our infrastructure development. Notably, we have this project implementation unit that would help us identify bankable infrastructure projects. Of course, we also have the North-South Corridor project. We also note that transport infrastructure is one of the areas where we need more concentration, because the transport links that we have between countries and our own regions, there's still a lot to be done. We also think in that there could be railways systems that can be considered for cross-border trade. We do have now bilateral engagements with our countries on how we could benefit from this kind of getting nodes between these countries and see where value can be derived from identifying areas of cross-border value chains. We are also having in mind the very same market integration approach, that we need to link infrastructure, as we see, from Durban to Dar es Salaam. We always talk about Cape to Cairo, but it's yet to come to fruition. We state, among others, that when we look at the regional value chains, we cannot have industrial value chains without thinking about the infrastructure that has to connect them. In parallel, we've got negotiations for the movement of businesses. This also is still at a very early stage. There were a couple of meetings. It is led more by Department of Home Affairs. This came out of the understanding that you would have a free movement of goods, but at the same time, generally in Africa, we also have some difficulties with movement of persons, but particularly in this case, movement of business persons. So this committee has been formed to try and come up with an instrument that would regulate the free movement of business persons. It is still at very, very early stages. The negotiations have just started. I think about 3 meetings have been held on the movement of business persons. What we do in South Africa is that the Department of Home Affairs is the lead department. It is supported by Trade and Industry and the Department of Labor. So in all of these instances, before we go to a tripartite meeting, we come together as the departments and come to some position that we can advance the negotiation. As I stated, we have only a few meetings, 3 substantive meetings. One was of formulating committees, drafting in terms of reference. So the most substantive meetings were only 23. We know what has been said, that we also have a parallel process in the bridge that's looking at something like what we're doing in tripartite. We also do note from our Department of Home Affairs the issues of processing more visas. We're facing pressures from those who believe, especially in South Africa, that you can process visas on arrival. This has become a challenge for us because it's an issue that only applies in their area. And we strongly believe that we cannot, because guided by Home Affairs, this is not a framework or dispensation that we have in South Africa. And therefore, we will be really upholding the position of Home Affairs at all of these negotiations. And as I stated, the EAC in particular would like to believe that what they are doing in their part of the world is a good one for everyone. And that on the basis of our able children should follow their model. And they have created a bit of a problem in that, as we state, we cannot have the same dispensation as theirs because we take into account other issues, the risks involved in other related Home Affairs issues. We are not sure what they are proposing as the EAC when they talk about reciprocity, creating on their keys, because these were principles borrowed from market integration. Our understanding is that you cannot have energy in Home Affairs related matters because those are issues of national sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And we don't have many examples of these kinds of principles being applied in the area of movement of business tax. We've also, of course, not been able to get any explanation from the EAC as to how exactly they think this is going to work. We've had a summit stated in the beginning that marked the launch of the text of this agreement. So it is the main text that has been launched in Egypt. And then, of course, we have a couple of annexes to the agreement that were negotiated. And as we say here, we have Annex 1 is on tariff commitment schedules. We indicate that we've just exchanged offers with the EAC and we're negotiating. This, when we conclude this, it will be one of those schedules of commitment. And so will be the case when we deal with our offers to Egypt, to Ethiopia. Once we conclude them, they become annexes to this agreement. We then have an annex on trade remedies that is still being negotiated. We've got an annex on rules of origin, this is also still being negotiated. We have got others on customs, on technical barriers to trade, SPS, that has been negotiated, awaiting what others call legal strategy. Otherwise, that the substance of the work is covered. We are hoping that within of course, in parallel, the negotiations of on trade services will be beginning. As of next month, they will be starting with the establishment of technical committees to negotiate trade services. So there is every opportunity to now try and speed up both the market integration in goods, but also the process that will help us scale up the negotiations on trade services. I think I'll just stop here for now.
Thank you very much. And I think perhaps this is a good opportunity for us just to make some comments in the area and not any questions, all right? Thank you very much. Honourable Williams, I think we'll just go down that way. Honourable Cornwall, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you. This is very new. It's very new. It says in your presentation that the first launch was on the 10th of June, so it's like 6 weeks old, this whole process. I just want to know... Okay, so when did it start? I didn't know when... I just want to know when it started and timelines. I'd like some timelines about when you think you're going to be getting somewhere. But most importantly, I just want to talk about the infrastructure. You talked about the corridor from Durban to Dar es Salaam. I just want to know, what is the progress on that and how is that going? Is this just a wish list, a happy thought, three-lane highway from Durban to Dar es Salaam? Or is there actual plans involved here? Have you set up plans? And also, what about East Africa? Is there going to be infrastructure around getting from South Africa by road or rail to East Africa? I just want to know more about the infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I rather think the process is slow. You know, Africa is growing and we must help. And, you know, if you see what's happening in Ethiopia, you know, they're growing at 10% and we're not there. You know, the communications lines and infrastructure lines are not open. So that is a concern. It's slow. Even, you know, my concern is that South Africa has not signed yet. Do we have a list of the 14 countries that have signed? And there were participating countries, 26. And who are they? And what's your prognosis? Will they eventually sign, the other 26? And then I want to know, what was the reaction of the European Union to this this whole new free trade area in Africa, and so the United States of America, with any reaction, and from China? Was it positive behind the scenes, or was it negative? And then on the visa on arrival, you know, quite clearly you say that South Africa do not have the legislation to deal with that. But do you know whether we have a legislation to deal with online applications? Like if you go to Turkey, you do it online, you print it, and when you arrive there, you just hand it in. That's not a solution to the problem.
Thank you. Honourable
Thank you, Chair. I have some others after this. I underscore the question about the timeline signing. I'd really like to know when we will sign. And I would have expected, I'm not 100% sure what legal scrubbing means, but I presume it just means checking everything that we are signing complies with South African law. But the agreement wasn't new to us when we went to the summit on the 10th of June. I presume the agreement was agreed long before the summit. So then we should have had time to scrub it beforehand. So I'd really like to know when exactly we're going to sign. And then from signing, if you could just outline to us what happens thereafter so that the agreement actually comes in force. I understand that 14 states have to actually ratify it, which is, I presume that means it must go through their domestic parliaments, as it must come through ours. And when we ratify it, or when 14 member states have ratified it, then is the agreement only then immediately in force, and what is the projected timeline for that? So, put another way, how long until there is an actual, in practice, CFTA in place on the African continent? What are the implications? If you could just spell out the implications for those countries that don't reach the threshold of 14 that need to ratify it, what happens to the other 12 that do not? People that do not. Then, all the annexes and the phase two negotiations don't deal with, or as far as I can see, they don't deal with non-tariff barriers behind the border issues. And I'm worried about that because that is a huge inhibitor to trade in Africa. And so I wonder whether, I mean, last week the lady who presented from the DTI last week said that there was a mechanism, which I checked out online on the weekend, whereby people could report non-tariff barriers to some kind of secretariat who would then... The problem with that, so I checked it out online and it seems to be quite exciting. Now, I thought that there's no problem with that, that's great. The problem is that that is a ad hoc, a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. So if someone's truck is stuck in Angola, they can report it to that report that helpline and get it sorted out. But it doesn't deal with systemic issues across the continent. So you might find that SPS issues are a problem in all of the states, or border delays are a problem in 10 of the states. So we need to have a way to deal with systemic problems, not just on an ad hoc case-by-case basis. So I'd really like that to be in the built-in agenda. My last question is around the services. This is, I suppose, related to the movement of business persons. But, I mean, South Africa is a major provider of services and professional consulting services on the continent. And so this is obviously very important to us. So if you could just give us a slightly more detailed insight into what's happening with the phase two negotiations, I'd be grateful. Thank you.
Right. Would you please take a response to those questions? I'm sure both the chief director and the acting director can do so.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with Amit's question. The first question was when did we start negotiating? We launched the negotiations in 2011, so this is a process that's been coming for quite a while, phase one of the negotiations. It took quite a while to do the discipline that I faced, to exchange information, to agree on the modalities and so forth. It took 18 months. It's only after that process finished that we could start with the negotiations. So what we've done up to now, as you've explained, is we finalized the framework agreement, if you can call it that. So it's the main agreement with 10 annexes. Now, three of those annexes, that is the most important annexes, you know, has not been agreed. So there's still work that is part of a built-in agenda. The one is on the tariff commitments, that's critical, because, I mean, that is what the free trade area is really about, the exchange of the tariffs. And we started with the negotiations on that. It's a process that takes quite some time because we are negotiating the old tariff book. So for South Africa, for example, we're negotiating 7,000 tariff lines. So this is a project that is quite detailed and very technical. We started with that with the EAC that includes 5 countries. Even though with Tanzania, that's part of the EAC, we already have an agreement under SADC, and that will take place. So we're really negotiating with Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda. And then we've also almost finalized our offer to Egypt. One thing that is complicating the process a bit is the fact that we are negotiating at SACU, the Southern African Customs Union. So once we've agreed with our internal consultations in South Africa on what offer we can make, we have to go to SACU, we have to look at what are the offers that the other four countries can make, and then we have to have a consolidated offer that we can make to the EAC. So that is a process that complicates it further and takes a bit more time. But so now after signature, what will happen is we are going to finalize the work on the outstanding work under phase one. So the tariff commitments, there is a timeline that should be put in place by the ministers that we must try and do that within 6 to 12 months to finalize the tariff commitments in between the countries. We still have to negotiate with Ethiopia as well, where the offer is almost final up as well. And then we will have another offer that we have to negotiate also individually. So it's, as I say, it's a complicated process. With the other countries, it's not part of static. That is Djibouti, Libya, Sudan, Comoros, Eritrea. So there is a number of negotiations that's taking place at the same time. So to meet the deadline is going to be a target, but that is what we're aiming at. At the same time, we're also negotiating Annex 2, that's on trade remedies. What we've agreed on trade remedy for now in the agreement is that we will use the WTO provisions on trade remedies. But trade remedies is a very complicated, the requirements of the WTO is very complicated, so there is a case in the region to look at trade remedies that would be easier to use for the country, so that will still be negotiated as well. As well as rules of origin that is very closely linked to the tariff commitments. We're also busy with that. We have finalized a big part of the rules of origin annex, but the specific rules that on specific products is still is outstanding, so that is also what we will still need to do after signature. Then in terms of the process after signature has also been asked who has signed, who hasn't signed. We couldn't find an agreement. It was not finalized months before the summit. It was finalized a couple of days before the summit. The agreement was finalized. So we couldn't have the legal scrubbing. We started with the legal scrubbing before the summit as soon as we finalized the agreement. But we could only do the legal scrubbing for the main agreement and we started with the annexes. So that still needs to be finalized. For us being able to go through the process of needed in South Africa, for us to sign, the whole agreement must go through legal scrubbing. The legal scrubbing is a combined effort by all the member states, so all 26 countries take part of the legal scrubbing process. We will have another legal scrubbing meeting in August. We will hopefully finalize the legal scrubbing and then we can start with our processes to get the necessary authority to sign. 14 countries have signed the agreement. Angola, Burundi, the Comoros, the Congo, 16. And Djibouti, Egypt, Kenya, Malawi, Rwanda, Nigeria, Seychelles, Swaziland, Sudan, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zimbabwe have signed the agreement. There is 24 countries that have signed the declaration. South Africa did sign the declaration. There's two countries that haven't signed the declaration, and they will do that in future. What will happen is, you correct that once 14 countries ratify the agreement, it will enter into force. Once it's entered into force and you have not signed the agreement yet, you would have to go through, you have to accede to agreement. So there is a provision in the agreement that makes provision for countries to accede, so you would have to go through those processes if you haven't signed the agreement yet. If it enters into force and you sign the agreement, you must just go through your ratification processes for each enter into force for that specific country. So it will enter into force for the 14 countries that are signed. And then once you finalize those processes, it will enter into force. And then in terms of the NCBs, really, NCBs is critical. It is one of the 10 annexes that is negotiated. There's a specific annex on NCBs, a specific annex on CPTs, annex on FPS, that is related in some ways all these policy annexes. The NCB, and all of this has been concluded, so it was just going through the legal scrubbing. In the annex on NCBs, there's a specific mechanism on how to deal with NCBs. There's a fast-track mechanism against the dispute, how we will deal with that. So we hope once that is in place, we would be able to deal also with the systemic issues that you were talking about across the continent. And then on the other issue on the services is services. There are the biggest services economy on the continent. And in SADC, we can already see the benefits. Even though we have not negotiated services in SADC, we are currently busy negotiating services in the SADC context. And even across the regions, if you look at the EFC and COMESA, the integration in terms of services is really limited. It's like that across the whole continent. So there's a lot of groundwork we will need to do. There's not much that we can build on like we do in goods. So we have to develop the whole legal framework really from new. So that is what we will focus on from now. We'll start, the first meeting is actually for September, the tripartite meeting on the services negotiations. And at the same time, we will also be negotiating other new generation issues, like it's called intellectual property, competition, and investment. So all of that will be negotiated with services as well, as in the second part of the in phase two. So we will start all of that negotiations now in September, because all of it is also in some way. So maybe just in short, answering a few of the questions, my colleague will also respond to that.
Just to add also on the services part, the other challenge is the capacity of some of the member states to negotiate certain services. And then, of course, as we said, the resources as well. The need for training, the need for training, but also some member states are struggling just to have enough resources to send officials to meetings. So that becomes a challenge. Just for training goods, there are times when some member states leaders cannot travel. You find that in Zanku, we go to a meeting with one or two member states that got problems during a certain time. So that also has got an impact on the course of the negotiation. Only infrastructure. I think the infrastructure that requires resources, as we all know. So one of the programs that are put in place would be to, first of all, structure the infrastructure problem in such a way that we are at the practical stage and find a source of funding. Because all of these are cross-border, and it goes through countries that also don't have enough resources to carry that capital investment. So it becomes critical that it has to be planned in phases, which is why the North-South Corridor is one of those structures that concentrate more on trying to make sure that the plans are in place to a point where when the projects are ready, then you identify whoever can invest in those projects. The visa application online, we do not necessarily have a ready answer. It's more of a home affairs process, but we do understand that at this stage it's not yet possible, but I think the home affairs would best give us an accurate answer. And of course the reaction of the EU, China and the US, well, generally we haven't had so much out of at least our formal engagements with the EU, China and the rest, except for their need to understand how the tripartite will be put in place. And same questions as honourable members are asking, I think we do receive those questions from our other counterparts.
Departments have completed. Would you like to add something?
I think the one question that I think maybe that we didn't answer is by when do we think that this process will be completed? As I said, in terms of the main agreement, now it's just got the legal scrubbing and the important countries would have to ratify it. We think that will probably take between 12 to 24 months for the ratification processes in the different countries for us to reach that 14 ratification. This will also give us time then to complete the build in the Annex 1 and Annex 4. That is really critical. I mean, we can ratify this agreement, but if you don't have Annex 1 and Annex 4, it's not really any new market access. So those are critical parts also to be finalized. But we anticipate that it will take probably about between near to 2 years for all of the ratifications to be done. And then we also have a timeline of the end of 2017 to complete phase two. So the services negotiations and the avenue generation issues. By then we will also have to go through a new process, of course, then to ratify those parts of the agreement that we renew. In terms of the question, maybe just to add on the question about what was the reaction from the EAC, the US, and China, they have been asking questions how it just work and getting more understanding, but they're really supportive, especially the EU is very supportive of this process, even on a continental level, because there'd be a lot of benefits for them in this, especially in relating how the impacts that they have for the different regions will work with the tripartite. So that's a benefit for them. We will have to see how this works.
We will take that, Honourable Hilda. Anyone else who would like to raise another question, comment?
Thanks very much. I want to ask you, is this herald the end of SACU as a customs union? You mentioned, for example, that Namibia has signed, who's a member of SACU, but we have not signed, and Swaziland has signed. So that raises an interesting question in my mind, because if they ratify the agreement, but we're supposed to negotiate with a single common tariff, then essentially what we've done is dissolve SACU. So I'm not opposed to it. I was asking, is it the end of SACU? Because we're really tired of giving so much money in any case. For me, that's an interesting question. Then the other one is, why do the, from your answer, I thought I understood that the, what do you call them, the regional economic communities continue to exist. So why is that? What is the purpose? What is the purpose of having the BSC or SADC if the FTA ratified among all its members? So what is the continued purpose of the RECs if the FTA comes into effect? And then obviously, I think everyone on this committee would agree that this is obviously extremely important, I think, for South Africa. So I'm interested to know how seriously the department is taking these negotiations and how many people you have in your team working on these. There's a huge amount of work to be done. I can understand that there's a huge amount of negotiations to do. And I would hope that you have a full team of people working on nothing else but this for the next 24 months. And so I'd really like to know how many people you have working on it, how many teams you've got, and are only working on this alone.
Yes, I do have one or two issues myself just to raise here, but just to note the members, we will be dealing with SACU tomorrow. On page 15, you refer to the outstanding annexes to the agreement, built in agenda 1, 2, and 4. And if I would have appreciated you unpacking that a little bit more before, given that would appear to be related to the rules of origin to our industrialization issue, and the fact that South Africa would want to support a more complex value addition process, and we are aware that other members would like a simpler, to retain the simpler process there, and that poses a direct, if you like, risk to value-added industrialization. Thank you.
Thank you. On this first question, the end of SACU, I think we look at this from two sides. This is the TFTA, Free Trade Agreement, where SACU is a customs union, in the same way as the EAC. SACU maintains a common external tariff, and SACU is bound together by the agreement itself. So the ratification of the agreement will be by all SACU member states in order to protect the common external tariff. So it is also provided for in the SACU agreement that you cannot conclude an agreement with third parties without the consent of the rest of the member states of SACU. So sorry, it will indeed be ratified by OSAC member states in order to guarantee and protect the common national interests. The recognition of the RFPCs, this agreement recognizes that SADC protocols still exist in the SADC free trade area at the very beginning. But as and when the agreement is ratified and on an FI place, then you are trading in now in the context of the tripartite as an FTA. The difference here is that it doesn't tie you into customs union commitments, like to go into other areas of integration, but it is the freedom of movement of goods and services becomes key. So the tripartite will help in that it's not going to require or complicate what is already here where there are multiple memberships. But if you have one FTA where, for instance, the goods can flow freely between SAFU and Egypt or freely between SAFU and Ethiopia, you don't have to have any sort of stresses about the customs union arrangements that exist. So to that extent, it helps us avoid those multiple membership problems. In terms of teams, we, as a department, we do take it very seriously. In almost every area of work, we do have officials at the technical level. The negotiations are structured in such a way that you've got technical working groups, you've got a trade negotiating forum, and then you've got a forum of directors general. So at all levels, we do have a fair amount of representation and people that specialize in the various areas of work. I think my colleague will take other questions.
Just to add in terms of the teams, in my directorate I've got 5 units that will focus on the different parts of the negotiations, the rules on market access, goods into the CBTs, all of that. Then as well the legal side that will focus on intellectual property and investment, competition and services. So we have 5 teams that work on this. They work the United Nations Africa multilaterals that also give support in this. Then also we work with other divisions in the DTI as well as other government departments like agriculture and staffs where there's some specific issues that we are negotiating. This is a priority for us, so we're giving a lot of attention to this. But it's not the only negotiations that we are involved in, so that is an issue. We're also starting with the Continental Free Trade Area negotiations now. And the Continental Free Trade Area negotiations will cover both goods and services in the first phase. So it is going to require that we maybe even further divide the teams to focus on both these negotiations. We're also currently still negotiating the Doha round in the WTO, so we're busy with that. India, so there is a lot of negotiations that is taking place, but Africa is our priority. It's a priority for the department as well. So we're giving all the attention that we can to this. And then in terms of the rules of origin, this is a very important area for us, a critical area, as I mentioned earlier, the rule of origin, because that also really determines whether you are able to make a market access commitment or not. A lot of the other countries indeed have argued that we need a simpler rule of origin. So there's been arguments of to have a value add, so have a rule. So a general rule that say if you have a value add of 25%, then you should be able to qualify. We have been consistent from the start that we want less rules, meaning that for individual products, there must be a specific rule that will depend on the product. And that has been agreed, that approach has been agreed in the tripartite, and that is what is taking the time now, the negotiation of those less rules. So the general rules has been agreed. That is also common between all of the rest, but what we're now negotiating is that specific rule. Like for example, clothing and textiles, where inside it you will have a double stage transformation rule, meaning that you can not import material and then make clothing and export. So you can't do that inside it. You can do that in COMESA and the EAC. So that's different less rules that we have for specific products, and that is what we are negotiating, though, to see what rule is being in the rule in the tripartite. For us, as you mentioned, value add is very important. It's a critical ingredient in our industrial development. So, and that is from the point of view that we're going to look at the rules of origin negotiation to make sure that there's value add and that the value of the preferences that we're giving is going to the tripartite member states and not to means that the two countries are part of the tripartite. And then, of course, also to support regional integration, because this has been a focus for us as well. We support regional integration and the development of regional value chains, and also to have rules of origin that will support that process. That process. Thanks.
And on the unenforced tariff commitments, what we are saying here is that we recognize that there is lag. But if we give examples, Egypt is in commerce and South Africa is in SADC. So there will have to be a schedule of commitments between Egypt and South Africa for it to complete the whole of the tripartite. And we will now also be governed by the same rules of origin that would have been negotiated. So on that front, we will all be trading now under the tripartite. But in the meantime, we are still able to continue as the rest until such time that the entire agreement is concluded. The rest of the trade remedies are more, as my colleague has explained, more of the technical issues governing trade between countries that will come into play there. They are hindered as trade remedies by the capacity that exists in member states to really adhere to the WTO requirements.
Thank you. You may have got the time wrong, Honourable Professor, but we just are concluding at the moment. There was something here, yes, the page 10, where you listed the issue of 157 projects, 59 roads, etc., etc. The aim is to address physical, non-physical bottlenecks along the corridor. It will be helpful because we do deal with industrialization as well, and we're aware that infrastructure within the African region is going to play a key role here. If we get a list of these projects within the week, if possible. The other thing is the list, the timeline, which has already been requested, a list of the 26 countries and those outstanding, as it were. And I've just raised one issue around industrialization and, you know, Annexure 4. But indeed, there are other areas where there may be challenges, the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act and so on, you know. Now, we're doing amendments along the way, and if we're not aware of some of these challenges, we won't be able to address them. So I regard what we've got this morning as a really sound introduction, but not where we need to be. See, if we're really going to work towards an integrated and coordinated approach of trade and industry, so that industry is driving trade, one, and that these agreements that we're part of, and in fact really one of the driving engines, is in line with the regional integration plan and so on. So we would appreciate more information in that area, that roadmap, etc., that you've referred to. And one seems to be aware that these negotiations take a long time, not 2 or 3 years. When did these start? I thought I heard you say that earlier. When? 2011. And, you know, 4 years is relatively short. But the problem is time is not on our side. That is the problem. And we really need an identification of these challenges so that from a committee side, we can also push. Honourable Hill-Luke?
I just have one last question, Chair. I just want to make double sure we're not committing to anything in terms of government procurements, local procurements.
Now, I know, Prof, you just arrived, but if there was anything you want to clarify that you may have read the documents and so on in this area, please go ahead. If not, you know, you will, of course, be eager to learn that is a Soku, it's tomorrow, I'm sure, that you just confirmed. And we'll be dealing with Soku tomorrow at 9 o'clock. And we haven't only invited the department, we've invited Treasury, and we're certainly hoping they'll bring along someone from SARS and else that we invited. Oh, yes. And also, Professor Mutuli Parksonberg here. Thank you very much. So, the venue is in Mark's building, 46. But we'd really like to thank you, Mr. Marishani. I think you're actually an acting chief director. Now I called you director at the beginning, my apologies. We certainly hope that acting chief director that would soon be confirmed. And thank you very much, Ms. Kruger, for coming out this morning. And if we could just set a deadline on when we would expect this. What do you think, Friday is too long? So Thursday afternoon, so that we have a Friday morning. Thank you very much. Now, members, we had to break up the meeting into two, primarily because of the PGIR. And it's interesting that the EU, you know, interest was mentioned here, because the Honourable Williams and myself were recently present during the FAEU strategic IBM meeting, and yet indeed they are very interested in what's going on here. So we ought to keep well abreast of this. Thank you very much. And on that note, members, the meeting is adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you.